Wives of the Mind explores the passions and pursuits of liberal arts professors. Hello, I'm Christian Elliott, and joining me in the WVIK studio today is Dr. Christopher Strunk, Associate Professor of Geography and Coordinator of Latin American Studies at Augustana College. Dr. Strunk's teaching and research interests include urban geography and planning, international migration and immigration policy, human rights, foodways, and urban agriculture. His research explores transnational migration and immigrant and refugee organizations in the United States. He has conducted research in Bolivia, Washington, D.C., and Minnesota, and is currently researching urban gardening practices and migrant incorporation in the Midwest. Dr. Strunk, welcome to Lives of the Mind.
Thanks for having me, Christian.
So we'll start out with a little bit about your background as an academic. What originally drew you to geography as a discipline?
I think, I was a government and Latin American studies major and undergrad, and I hadn't even heard of geography as a field. I wasn't offered at Wesleyan University where I went. And I was, after college, I volunteered for a year in Bolivia, working with non-governmental organizations in peasant and indigenous communities around food and economic development. And I found that geographers were asking a lot of the really interesting questions that I was hoping to explore either in international development work or what turned out to be academic research. So geographers were thinking about the relationship between water and community development, migration and food, and those sorts of connections between humans and the environment were really interesting to me, and it was something that I hadn't really fully been able to explore in political science and anthropology. So that, I think, is what led me to geography originally.
So after Bolivia, you went to graduate school, correct?
That's right.
Could you talk a little bit about your experience in graduate school and the research you conducted there?
Sure. I actually spent a couple of years in New York, and that was maybe another way that I found myself getting into geography. And I lived in Brooklyn and worked in Queens. And so I had an hour subway ride and a lot of walking. And I think, you know, living in New York also really got me to think about the relationship between the built environment and communities in ways that I hadn't really gotten a chance to, not living in a big urban center like that. And I also worked with immigrant communities in New York City. And so that sort of got me thinking about studying international migration and then sort of the ways that immigrant communities sort of create spaces in places like New York. And then I ended up studying Bolivian migrants in Washington, D.C. And so sort of this process of migrating from Cochabamba, which is a big urban center in Bolivia. It's grown sort of dramatically in the last 50 years. It is just 50,000 people in the 1950s, and now it's a city over 1 million. And I was really interested in why there was this big concentration of Bolivians in Washington, D.C. I had lived in D.C. and done some work with a think tank on Latin American policy in D.C., and I remember sort of just going to 4th of July parades and other events around the cities around D.C., and there would always be Bolivian folkloric dancers, and that was sort of where I got this idea for a research project. Like, you know, why are they here? And that's one thing I really like about geography as well, that I think a lot of the times geographers are out, you know, on the landscape looking at what the sort of physical environment is like, what people are doing in those spaces, and then that sort of helps us to develop research questions. And in graduate school, I spent about a year in Washington, D.C., sort of in Northern Virginia, in Maryland, talking to Bolivian migrants and really studying their organizations. I focused on hometown associations, which are organizations developed by people from the same city, town, region. There's a long history of these in the United States, Italians, Irish, many other groups are forming hometown associations to raise money to try to promote development, well-being back in their communities of origin. And I was really interested in how the Bolivian hometown associations were developed. And so what I did was I did ethnographic research, which is a type of qualitative method where researchers are observers, participant observers in a community and sort of observing what people do in everyday life. So it's a research method that anthropologists use a lot, but sociologists, geographers, others use that method. And this research, it was pretty tough on me. I got to watch a lot of soccer games. That was my primary sort of way of interacting with this community. I would, on all day Saturday and Sunday, I would go to soccer fields and watch games and talk to people and then be a participant in the meetings where people were organizing soccer games. And what I was interested in is sort of how rural organizational practices, the ways that these migrants from rural communities outside of Cochabamba, how they were sort of taking these very similar sort of these agricultural organizational practices, the way that they organize agriculture and access to water and collective labor and sort of other ways of getting people to participate in agriculture communities. How did they take those practices and then how did they apply them in some similar but also some different ways to organize their lives and the hometown association in Washington, D.C. So, for instance, people would be, like in Bolivia, they would be fined if they didn't attend soccer games and didn't participate in some of the organizational practices. Okay. And so that was one way that it was transferred, these organizational practices. But, of course, there had to be changes as well, right? Because people were not living in a community. They couldn't sort of force everybody to provide collective labor on an irrigation canal, which they would have in Bolivia. In Washington, D.C., it was more about getting people to show up at soccer games and contribute money that would then be used to promote development in these rural communities by building churches, building schools, roads, and of course, soccer fields. So that those were some of the ways that I was interested in sort of thinking about the connections between these rural communities in Bolivia and then these suburban communities where that Bolivians were creating in the Northern Virginia and Maryland suburbs of D.C.
So moving back a little bit, I do want to talk about methods. And as an anthropology student, I have some experience with ethnographic methods, and it's cool to see those methods used in other disciplines that are similar. You say you had to go to soccer games. That must have been difficult. is there anything particularly challenging about ethnographic methods? You obviously chose them to answer your question the best way, but what is it about ethnographic methods that might be difficult? Or...
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a really good point that you choose the methods that are best suited to answer the types of questions that you're asking. And so for me, it was really important to understand how these organizations had developed and some of the tensions around building immigrant communities in the Washington, D.C. area where Bolivian migrants from these small towns really wanted to stay connected and to have these relationships maintained with from people that they knew from these rural communities. Many of the communities that I visited in Bolivia had more than 50% of the community were in the United States and in the Washington, D.C. area. And so ethnography was really important because I couldn't just be conducting interviews and getting at those types of relationships. I needed to be in the meetings and see sort of what their everyday lives were like. There are a lot of challenges, though, as you're suggesting. And I think one of them was being as a white North American researcher sort of showing up to Bolivian spaces. That is always a challenge. Sort of, a lot of people thought I worked for immigration and customs enforcement. And so there was some mistrust in those situations. People didn't understand why I was at soccer games. And so it was a lot of sort of explanation. And so I was able, because I had a number of collaborators on the project, both Bolivian researchers who had been working in the area before, and then people I met who became friends who were able to vouch for me. But those are some challenges that I think oftentimes arise with ethnographic research. And then I would also say, you know, it's a real challenge to think about how do you bring together all the field data that you have. So I have many, many conversations with people that I would take notes, you know, about afterwards. I would be spending, you know, 10 hours at the soccer fields and then go home and write frantically sort of everything that happened because I didn't really take notes at the games. And so then sort of trying to make that into a coherent narrative about what I was learning, I think is also much more difficult than when you can have a transcript.
Sure.
Or when you're working in the archives and you have all the forms of data right in front of you.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that was all your graduate school kind of research. And moving forward in time to now and in the Quad Cities at Augustana, I was a student in one of your geography classes, 325, on urban planning, and we worked with the Rock Island Urban Garden Program. Can you tell us a little bit about the program and your role in it?
Sure. The city of Rock Island maintains about 20 to 25 community garden spaces, mostly in the west end of Rock Island, where there's a lot of vacant properties and a lot of sort of disinvestment and marginalization in some of those neighborhoods. And so there are a lot of vacant properties. And over the last couple of decades, the city of Rock Island has given or allowed neighbors to rent properties that would otherwise be sitting vacant in order to grow food. And so this started in the 1990s as much more of an informal project by the city where planners would sort of just, you know, when they would talk to neighbors, they would offer neighbors an opportunity to develop an urban garden on these properties. Today, the city of Rock Island has a much more established program, and so they have an application process, and any resident of Rock Island or even other cities can apply to garden on one of these vacant lots. And so when I moved to Rock Island, I was really interested both in these spaces, but then also the immigrant and refugee population here in Rock Island. And this intersected because many of these gardens are farmed by refugees from sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, Southeast Asia. And so they're really fascinating spaces where people from other parts of the world are bringing their agricultural knowledge. And seeds are coming from Nepal, from Burundi, from Tanzania, from Burma. And people are sort of transforming these spaces by planting different types of crops that we're not used to here in the Midwest, but grow quite well. And so what I've been doing is working with the city of Rock Island through the class that you were in, with student researchers, to get a better understanding of what's being grown in these plots, mm-hmm. How gardeners are being incorporated into the city, which is another one of my interests, or thinking about how does a community garden program increase belonging, help people feel like they're part of the city, and in what ways does the program sort of fall short, or how can we try to improve the those connections that are being created through the community garden program.
Yeah, so this is sort of an applied sort of research geography helping the city and their program too.
Yes, and the project that our class was working on was through the Upper Mississippi Center, which is a great center on campus run by Dr. Michael Reisner, where cities in the Quad City region asked the college to sort of help them with projects. It can be about urban planning, it can be about stormwater management, about invasive species and things like that. We've done a lot of really interesting projects. In this particular one, the city of Rock Island asked the Upper Mississippi Center to help develop some new ideas and to, you know, get a better sense of the existing conditions in the community garden program.
Yeah. So you're also currently conducting research with another Augustana professor, Brian Leach, in the history department. Can you tell us a little bit about how history and geography are coming together here?
This is a related project to the community garden work that I've been doing. And Brian and I also are co-advisors at Augie Acres, and we're developing a new food studies minor that will roll out next year under semesters. And one question that we've been really interested in is, how does this current focus on community gardens, and this is something that is, you know, certainly not unique to Rock Island. There are cities around the country and around the world that are really interested in reincorporating agriculture into cities. And there are a lot of benefits that we know sort of growing local food in cities. You know, access increases access to food, increases access to nature, which is really great for lots of sort of attributes of health, can improve community development as well. And so there's a lot of interest, and obviously we are interested in local food as something to get students involved in, and it's something that is good for the Quad Cities. But we also were interested in sort of thinking about the longer history of urban agriculture in Rock Island in particular. And we wanted to explore this history and thinking about what were the similarities and differences between earlier iterations of urban agriculture in cities. And so Brian, as a historian, knew about the settlement house, which used to be located in the West End, where the Hauberg, I think it was Suzanne Hauberg, would provide spaces for poor families and particularly children to garden as a way to sort of, improve local communities and using food to sort of incorporate immigrants. And we saw a lot of similarities between sort of what's happening now, where the community garden program is primarily used by immigrants to grow food that is culturally significant to them, but also as a way to get them more involved in Rock Island.
Sure.
And so we wanted to explore some of the similarities. We also have been mapping different food sites, grocery stores, truck farms, which were local farms where, and they're called truck farms because people would just sort of load up their food on a truck and then go to the market. And Rock Island has a really interesting history where up until the 1970s, a lot of the southwestern part of Rock Island and sort of the main city of Rock Island used to be truck farms. So where the Walmart was supposed to go in, that was a number of different families owned pretty large scale agricultural operations, and they would provide food to restaurants and farmers markets. And as the economy shifted, as Hy-Vee developed as this big regional grocery store, those farms disappeared. The last of them really disappeared in early 2000s, but we saw sort of this really interesting continuity of agriculture throughout Rock Island's history, and sort of wanted to explore the different ways that the city is trying to incorporate low-income, marginalized populations through food, and using food as a way to promote healthy behaviors in these areas as well.
Everybody likes food.
Everybody likes food, and everybody likes gardens. But there's a lot of other things going on there as well.
Of course,
these efforts to really be trying to shape places through urban agricultural initiatives.
Yeah. You did mention Augie Acres earlier. What does Augie Acres do?
Augie Acres is a student-run community garden, and it's been going for more than 10 years now. It's actually started by a geography student who is now a planner here in the Quad Cities, and he had this idea of turning these vacant lots that are right by the Carver Center into a community garden, and the Augustana supported the project and bought the land, and so now we have two pretty big lots where students during the spring and summer and into the fall, students decide what to plant. They harvest it. Over the past few years, they have been selling the food at the Freight House Market. And so we're also getting students to learn about entrepreneurship sort of in firsthand way, a lot of the challenges sort of with developing a business to sell food. We have a lot of deer in the area. And so those are some of the challenges with it. But students sort of come together with class projects and then just their own interest to create this really great space for learning and sort of practice on campus.
It's a cool opportunity. Is there any way for students and community members in the Quad Cities to be involved in community gardening or the Rock Island Gardening Program or support it?
Mm-hmm. I think certainly there are a lot of different garden spaces around Rock Island and the Quad Cities. And so the community garden program has an application process, and if people are interested, you know, certainly can be involved in that. There are a couple different organizations that grow food and then distribute it to food pantries or to residents in the West End, including the Rock Island Urban Farmers, led by Brian McMaster at Broadway Church. And so that's a really interesting initiative. And then the hope is in the future that gardeners will be actually selling some of their produce. And so some of the produce might not be familiar to long-term residents, but those would be ways to sort of be involved in sort of, you know, purchasing food at some of the farmers markets that we hope to set up in the next couple of years, and sort of engaging with refugee gardeners. I think, you know, learning about what kind of food can be produced from Ethiopian eggplants, for example.
Right. Yeah, I had the opportunity to try some of those recipes when we visited a Burmese gardener.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and his food was great. So. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of barriers to selling food, particularly when you're from a different country and you don't have a lot of those social networks and understanding of local regulations. And so,
sure.
But it's something that a lot of gardeners have expressed interest in, and the city is supportive of sort of finding some ways to promote some entrepreneurship as well, beyond the great things that are already happening with the community garden program.
So changing gears here a little bit, you've mentioned planning and urban planning a couple times in different contexts. For people who don't know, what do urban planners do, just in general and also in the Quad City context?
Okay. Planners wear a lot of different hats, but broadly, planners are, they're helping people in cities, helping local officials, and working with residents to make decisions about what their community should look like, and also thinking about what the vision is for the community, and then planning for the future. And so planners do a lot of work around transportation, thinking about where roads should go, how to plan for alternative forms of transportation besides automobiles. So sort of how to make cities more accessible for bikes and for people who are walking and for transit. And then planners also sort of help to promote economic development. So they try to provide a framework for new businesses, new forms of economic opportunities to come to the Quad Cities.
So what are some resources that people could look for to learn more about the kind of thing that you're studying, your own work, any books or resources people could search for?
There's a great book by Laura Larson, who is a landscape architect and works sort of on urban gardening in the United States. And her book is called City Bountiful.
Okay.
And so that's sort of a history of community gardens in the United States. So she begins in the 1890s as cities were experiencing economic crises and looks at these different programs, some in Philadelphia, some in Detroit, some in other areas where cities actually started to rent out vacant lots to indigent and sort of other low-income people, and then traces that development of these types of vacant lot programs into the 20th century through Victory Gardens and other programs during World War II to try to promote urban agriculture. And so that's a really great historical look at sort of how we've come to have community gardens be this type of initiative that we think can solve so many challenges in urban areas. So that's a good one. My own work, I published a paper with a great former student of mine, Maggie Richardson, who is an anthropology and geography double major, and she did some research with Burmese gardeners a few years ago, and then we wrote a paper that was published in Social and Cultural Geography about some of the ways that refugee gardeners understand the garden spaces, and then how those understandings both sort of line up with how planners see gardens, but also conflict with how planners see gardens. So planners are looking to promote economic development, very wary of leaving spaces as community gardens for long periods of time, and looking to try to promote more traditional economic development. And so we found that there are some tensions there, but also a lot of opportunities, given the ways that Rock Island has supported urban gardens. So I think we can probably make that paper available to people on the website.
Yeah,
so
hopefully we can put that on our website when a website happens.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Strunk. I appreciated talking to you, and I think this is all really interesting stuff. So thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me, Christian.
This episode of Lives of the Mind was hosted by Christian Elliott. Theme music was written by Caitlin Tom and performed by Caitlin Tom and Douglas Ganster. This episode was recorded at the Doris and Victor Day Broadcast Center, home of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, a public service of Augustana College.